News time is 8:06. This is KPCW Park City. I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie this morning. It's November 14th, Thursday, and not just freezing, it's below freezing. With more on weather around the Wasatch Back, on the phone with us is ABC meteorologist Nate Larson. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Connor. Yeah, we've got temperatures reported in the mid-20s across some of Park City, the Wasatch Back area. A nice sunny, if not mostly sunny day. We do have a few high clouds around again today, but not as bad or widespread as yesterday. 50 degrees, though, expected in Park City today. Southwest flow ahead of another storm system moving in tomorrow is generating above-average temperatures. 56 in Heber for the high. We do have temperatures dipping to 30 overnight in Park City with a high of mid-40s tomorrow afternoon. Now, we do have a system pushing in tomorrow afternoon and evening, so it will bring some rain and snow showers to Park City, initially over to just snow with colder air moving in. So 46 for the high tomorrow afternoon, dipping to just 25 for an overnight low. Temperatures near 33, in fact, for the high on Saturday. I'm trying to think what day it is. I got there for a second. So 33 for the high on Saturday with some snow showers. Now, there haven't been any winter weather advisories issued just yet, but I do suspect at least for some of our higher elevations could see a weather advisory with anywhere from 4 to 9, maybe 10 inches of snow for some of the upper Cottonwoods. I think some of the mountain areas could see 2 to 4 inches, and even Park City could pick up a couple of inches as well Friday night into Saturday. So not a huge storm system. Initially, moisture comes out of the southwest, but then eventually northwest, which we got skipped over in Park City last time. We had northwest flow into Saturday morning and afternoon. But we could see a couple of inches of snow. Cold temperatures over the weekend, 37 for the high on Sunday, mid-30s Monday. Another system clips northern Utah, brings a few snowflakes. Not looking super impressive at this point, but it'll bring a little bit of the white stuff with cold temperatures staying in place. In fact, very cold Tuesday. Partly cloudy skies, just upper 20s for highs, teens for overnight lows. Could see snowflakes linger into Tuesday as well before high pressure builds back in and warms us up closer to midweek. We're still cold, 35 on Wednesday with sunshine, but should warm up a little bit through the rest of the next week as high pressure will likely stay in place. Heber dealing with rain and snow showers, could see an inch as well or two of snow tonight or tomorrow night into Saturday morning. Temperatures just in the upper 30s on Saturday, 43 on Sunday. We should be low 40s again Monday with teens for overnight lows. Could see or we're expecting snowflakes late Monday into early Tuesday with a high of just 37 on Tuesday, bouncing back to 41 by middle of next week.
ABC's meteorologist Nate Larson, thanks so much.
Thanks, Connor.
On the phone with us is the executive director of Mountain Trails Foundation, Laura Anthony. Good morning.
Good morning and happy Thursday, Park City. Happy Live PC, Give PC Eve.
That's
everybody's
true.
Gone out there and made their donations for their favorite nonprofits, including Mountain Trails and KPCW. Trails are actually really good out there. Of course, the on-mountain trails are all closed as the resorts are in full swing, full winter operation swing. We do have Round Valley. I was out there the other day, and it is so good. It's amazing. So if you need to get out and walk the dog, take a bike ride, go for a breath of fresh air, I would highly recommend getting out into the Round Valley area. I would say, however, that Rusty Shovel is not happy right now for trail use. It's quite muddy, actually. So if you could stay off the Highway 40 side, take it back, not the entire Highway 40 side, the upper trails on Highway 40 side. So like Carries and Rambler are seeing some mud pockets, but the Big Easy is great. Of course, Silver Quiven is paved trail, so that's always a good artery through that section of the trail system. Lost Prospector is going to be variable, especially as we kind of warm up. It's going to probably have big pockets of mud, so maybe Round Valley is a better option. I would imagine that out in the Clark's Ranch area, those trails are very dry too because they're exposed and they're wide. So another great place to go hang out on the trails. We've got Corey from South Summit Trails Foundation saying that Slate Creek Mountain Bike Trail is closed for the season and all the other trails in the Camas area are muddy. So please avoid them until we get some snow cover. Dave from Basin Rec is reporting that the county street parking restrictions go into effect tomorrow. So remember, if you're parking near a trailhead and there's no parking in the trailhead, do not park on the streets. They will be ticketing. Looks like that is especially applicable to the Summit Park area 24/7 in Jeremy area. And also he's reporting that Rob's Trail Head closes tomorrow for the winter. So, yeah, the report there is that, Rob's will be closed. So if you want to get out there one last time, today's your day. And then it looks like trails on Glenwild, on the front side of Glenwild, are really good. Just use best practices, please. If you do encounter a puddle, go straight through the puddle. There's really no way to go through, good way to go through a puddle, but if you need to do it, happen to be out, you encounter a puddle, go straight through, don't go around. We like to keep our single track, rather than widening it. And finally, let's see, Wasatch Trails Foundation, Mia is reporting that as of right now, Dutch Hollow and Jordanell Ridge behind UVU are still great dry trails. Everything else is muddy, and Pine Canyon Road will close tomorrow, so... Yeah, big trails report for the day, and we'll hope to see you out there, especially tomorrow during Live PC, Give PC. If you love trails and local radio, we'll hope to hear from you.
Thanks so much, Laura. That's been Laura Anthony, right, Executive Director of Mountain Trails Foundation. Going to get into a little bit of local news now. Park City residents have had their first look at the Main Street area plan, a bold vision to transform Old Town. KPCW's Christine Weller reports many locals shared positive feedback.
Park City hosted two open houses Tuesday where around 150 residents learned about and gave feedback on the Main Street area plan. The plan includes ambitious development initiatives, including expanding sidewalks, reducing parking and vehicle traffic, and the potential for two new gondolas. Locals favored a more walkable Main Street, even if it meant less parking. Park City resident Sally Rinderknecht said the plan is a good start in the effort to make Park City more pedestrian-friendly.
My husband would say, oh, we should take all the cars off of Main Street. But I think this is a good way to move in that direction. And some goals need to be accomplished in stages.
The plan also includes a new town square across from City Hall and significant redevelopment on Sweet Alley, including a boutique hotel, housing, and retail and office space. Old Town resident Delphine Comps was concerned about the increased lodging in the plan.
All of a sudden, they're really tall hotels, and it's totally messing up with people's views. I don't get it. I mean, this is like for tourists, not for locals. I don't understand the number of hotels that need to be created for this.
However, Councilmember Ryan Dickey said the plan does not propose any height changes to the code for Main Street and Sweet Alley. While the open house did include renderings of the proposed changes, the designs are not final. Comps did love the gondola ideas. Two new gondolas are included in the plan. One connects the Brew Pub lot at the top of Main Street to Deer Valley Snow Park, and the other would replace the town lift at Park City Mountain. The plan also considers moving the post office, which longtime Park Eye and KPCW volunteer DJ Peg Bodell supports.
I am not in favor of keeping the post office where it is. I've been going there for 50 years and don't enjoy it. It's not the same.
Bodell says she sees a lot of good ideas in the plan, and in some cases wants to expand on them. Regardless, Bodell says Park City needs a plan for the future.
We've been talking about a lot of these concepts for over 30 years. Park City will never be what it used to be. We can't go back. We need to plan and do it well. We need to plan for the residents as well as our guests.
Rinderknecht agreed the revitalization plan is necessary, but noted the community still has other needs.
We need to be a little bit careful in that we have other things in our community that we have been talking about for a long time that are still in limbo. Recycle Utah, senior accommodation.
Dickey said the council is on an aggressive timeline to set the Main Street area plan in motion. The council will consider feedback from the open houses as it moves forward. However, Dickey said right now, the council is just trying to figure out if this is a vision the community supports.
Can we all agree that we like this plan, that this is a future vision that we support, that we would be happy if we could achieve that? And if we like it, then we move forward into next year, pulling out the individual pieces into projects and starting to make it happen.
The city hopes to have the council's approval on the plan by the end of the year. Head to kpcw.org to see renderings and complete details of the Main Street area plan. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
And later on the program today, we'll be speaking with Summit County Councilmember Tanya Hansen about yesterday's Summit County Council meeting. Then Park City Education Foundation and President and CEO Ingrid Wheatley and their VP of Advancement, Jim Billow, have an update on programs offered by their nonprofit. Then Park City Films Executive Director Katie Wing previews upcoming screenings. At 9 a.m., it'll be Cool Science Radio today. This week, renowned researcher, physician, and neuroscience professor Godfrey Pearson talks about the science of weed. Is it a cure-all, a toxic, addictive substance, or something in between? Then Jasmine Smith, CEO of Rejuve.ai, shares the new app, now in beta testing, intended to help reduce your biological age. That's on Cool Science Radio, coming up at 9 a.m. right after the local news hour. And on the phone with me is Summit County Council Vice Chair Tanya Hansen to talk about yesterday's meeting. Thanks so much for coming on. Are you there, Tanya?
Yes.
Oops.
Good morning.
I see you. I hear you. Sorry about that. All right. Thanks so much for coming on again. I want to start with budget. So I take it that yesterday council made a decision, at least informally, about property taxes. A lot of residents got their notices, a notice of a potential increase last month. But that's not the case anymore. Can you explain kind of what council decided?
Yes, this is exciting news. Based on the most recent election results, now they're still counting votes, mind you, but we received some data yesterday. Based on the election results thus far, it appears that the emergency services sales tax will pass, with close to 80% of Summit County voters approving this initiative. So with this approval, we can move forward and cancel our truth and taxation public hearings. Because the emergency services sales tax, we will see revenue, some revenue going into 2025, mostly going into 2026. This offsets any increase in property tax. So if anyone's planning on attending a public hearing because you've got that tax notice, all of those public hearings have been canceled.
Yeah, it's a multi-month process because you have to notice it to the public, give everybody a heads up ahead of a public hearing in December, which would be when you adopt the budget. So that's why these notices went out before you got the results of the election. I want to step back because the emergency services sales tax you introduced because of a projected shortfall, if that's the best term, I guess, for lack of a better word, in the proposed 2025 budget. Is the sales tax that voters passed still projected to cover that gap? And, you know, what's the budget discussion been lately about cutting, keeping the proposed 2025 budget? What are you hearing from the rest of council?
Really, we haven't dug into that 2025 budget. We'll be doing that in the next few weeks. There is a slight shortfall from the 2024 budget that we'll be making up for in the 2025 budget. We're not looking for any real cuts that we've discussed. We think that it will be a balanced budget.
And you heard yesterday from the health department, a lot of the different county departments have been giving weekly presentations at council, at least since September, kind of about their own individual budgeting. What did the health department have to tell you yesterday?
Well, the health department is a really interesting department because they rely on grants to the tune of about $4.2 million that goes into their budget, plus money from the county. They are suggesting a relatively flat budget, except for the behavioral health portion of that budget. There is an increase there of $1.2 million, and that is a contractual change with the University of Utah. And really, our hands are tied on this. This is a great program that's necessary for our citizens, and we're going to go ahead and be able to fund that going into 2025.
Is that change just from bringing behavioral health services in schools sort of under the county umbrella in-house there, or is that part of the new contract that is being renegotiated for behavioral health writ large in Summit County?
My understanding is both. I'm not on that committee and I haven't been in those meetings, but my understanding, both of those things are adding to this budget number.
Okay. Moving on to Klein Dolly, for those unaware, this is a county-owned parcel of land next to Jeremy Ranch Elementary School. It's about 30 acres, 17 of which are developable, and, you know, development is being contemplated by the county on this parcel, but to do so, you'd need to issue an RFP. Those discussions continued yesterday with some input from members of the development community in Park City. This was really interesting to hear. Why and how did you choose who spoke yesterday? It was a lot of familiar faces from Park City area developments.
Right. It was a great meeting yesterday with the development community. You are correct. The county owns about close to 30 acres near the Jeremy Ranch Elementary School on Rasmussen Road. About 50 acres of that property is able to be developed due to the topography of the property. We have been reviewing this RFP for a couple of meetings, council meetings, but none of us are developers. Chris Robinson is kind of a developer, but we really didn't know enough about the RFP process and what might make sense to the development community. So staff reached out to, I don't know how they came up with the list of people they sent this information to. They reached out to the development community with the current RFP and said, does this make sense? Could you deliver us a good product with the information in this RFP? Do we need to refine it? What is your feedback on this? And it was great feedback from the development community. Many of them showed up in person, and there was information emailed to us as well. But the comments that they offered was everything, from suggested number of units, the timeline, the feedback on zoning, what this development could possibly look like. And so what we decided to do yesterday was to basically take that feedback and update this RFP proposal and send it back to the council for review via email. And once we're in a place where we feel like we're comfortable, to send that out to the development community and ask for proposals.
Yeah, from listening to and watching and attending the previous discussions about the RFP, there's been a lot of back and forth about how granular you want to get with some of the requirements. Are you going to go line by line and really spell out how affordable, how much housing, how much commercial, all this different stuff? Or do you let it be more general and let the developers give it their best shot with some looser guidelines? Did yesterday's feedback help the council land at a decision on that?
Yes, it did. I we're not going to be quite as granular in some of these requests. You know, the development community, they're the experts. And many of them in the room had done affordable housing projects, and they know what the county's looking for. They know what, citizens are looking for. The planning department had several public input meetings, and several of the developers attended those meetings. So I think they understand the overarching vision for this project. So we're not going to be quite as detailed and allow them to be creative and give it their best shot.
Yeah, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you and the public don't really get to see developers' bottom line. It feels like sort of a strange situation where you're really trusting them on this point, that they're proposing a rate of return that is indeed reasonable. Yesterday seemed like the closest you could ever get to seeing, to hearing about, what's important to a developer, what their bottom line is. When they have an owner or a shareholder that's going to profit, how does that impact negotiations, and how much are you willing to trust them in this process when they come back with a proposal?
I don't know how to answer that question. I really want to wait for these proposals to come back and see what they look like before I dive into that.
All right. Well, I think one of the developers that did talk to you yesterday about Klein Dolly was Dakota Pacific. They had their own agenda item, which was a follow-up on the proposal to develop its land there by Skull Candy, as well as the proposed partnership with the county to revamp the transit center and civic buildings like the library at Kimball Junction. Last week, we had the public hearing where we heard from many members of the public. The majority were opposed. There were a couple who spoke in favor. What did you hear from the public hearing last week? What's your take on that? Was there anything new, anything unexpected?
Yes, we had a great public hearing. It was so respectful and calm, and people, you know, it was really a nice public hearing compared to some of them we've had in the past on the subject matter. There were roughly 100 people that showed up in person and pretty much the same number online. 34 people provided feedback to us. The biggest issues that were discussed in that public hearing were what we've already heard before was traffic impacts at Kimball's Junction and 224 and the density. Those are the two biggest issues people are concerned about. And so yesterday we spoke with Dakota Pacific, you know, to make sure that they heard the same thing we heard in the public hearing, and yes, they did, and also how to address these concerns. Now, I will say Dakota Pacific has said that they, you know, are invested in working with UDOT and getting the traffic situation solved or relieved to the best of our ability, and because it's best for them and their project as well to overcome this problem. We have been, Chris and Canis on the council, have been meeting with UDOT to discuss their plans A and C. And if you're familiar with those plans, those are the two that appear to be moving forward. Proposal C, actually, if you really drill into it, is included in Proposal A. But Chris and Canis have been meeting with UDOT to see how we can refine that plan, what tweaks might be able to be made, if you will. And those are ongoing discussions, but I will tell you, my feeling is UDOT is invested in fixing Kimball Junction and helping relieve our traffic problem. Now, a lot of people in the public say, well, it doesn't matter if this development goes through or not. The Olympics are coming, so we have to fix that road anyway. But, you know, that's not necessarily true. And the legislature has said to us, if you think we're fixing Kimball's Junction just because of the Olympics, that's wrong. We're fixing Kimball's Junction because there's a problem and because of future development. They feel that they could mitigate the traffic impacts for the Olympics just by having, you know, people out there directing traffic, et cetera. So I take that to heart, that we really need to be working with UDOT to get this solution sooner rather than later and not just rely on the Olympics.
Yeah, and this proposal has been before council for 3 or 4 years. It was applied for in like early 2020, late 2019. It's been at the county for a long time. I want to give you a chance to answer that question that kept coming up during the public hearing, which is just, why is the conversation still happening if the majority of people who show up to public hearings, whether or not they're representative of the whole county, seem opposed to it continuing?
Well, if you go back in history, it's still happening because there was a lawsuit and the legislature came to us and asked us if we would please go back to the drawing board, pause the lawsuit and see if we could come up with an agreement that might make sense for Summit County. That's why this has continued to move forward. We're doing what we were asked to do. And whether it gets approved or not is yet to be seen, but we're doing what was asked. And really, you know, we need to work the best we can with our legislature.
And I want to quickly touch on before we go, the cemetery district did notice a tax increase last night. I believe it's $14 on a $1 million home in the Snyderville Basin. The cemetery district there is about the same as Basin Rec's boundaries. Those are the property owners who'd be paying for this. You approved this. Why does the Snyderville Basin need a cemetery?
Well, I'm really excited about this, and I know some people aren't, but the Park City Cemetery is full. So if you have lived in the Snyderville area, and I have a lot of friends who live in that area, and they've lived there for 30 some odd years, but if they were to expire, they have nowhere to go. Their family has nowhere to go and, you know, do a memorial or a funeral or anything. And so I think it's really important that there is a sense of community in the Sinaiterville Basin and that we offer a cemetery. We've had a lot of public feedback through the years. Even before I was on council, people would say to me, we need a cemetery in Sinaiterville. And I agree with that. We have a great committee that we put together who's very passionate about this. I think the location is a good location. There was a lot of work that had to be done finding the right location with the right soil content, so there's no rocks or boulders or anything like that. It's going up to the UOP across from the Run Amok Park. So there's a little bit of parking there, and I'm excited about this.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask because, you know, you mentioned how you, your family, has been in Summit County for generations. And I once spoke with a Hoytsville resident who had an interesting take on what the measure of a community is. And he told me it was how many times the conversation about expanding a cemetery comes up. With the Sinaiterville Basin getting its first cemetery, do you think this is, you know, a real sign that people are putting down roots and we might start to see generations of Sinaiterville Basin families?
Oh, I think we're already seeing that. And we saw that. I've seen that throughout my lifetime. We've seen generations in the Sinaiterville Basin. You know, the Bittners, the Rasmussens, old family names like that, the Flinders, old family names like that that are still in our county. But I think this, to me, this is a step towards a real sense of community.
Well, it's 8:34. I think I'm out of time. We've been speaking with Summit County Council Member Tanya Hansen. Anything else you want to mention before you go?
No, thank you very much. Just a reminder to people, no public hearings for truth and taxation.
Okay, thank you so much.
All right, have a great day. Bye.
Here with us in the studio now, we have Ingrid Wheatley. She's the Park City Education Foundation's president and CEO, and Jennifer Billow, their vice president of advancement. Thank you both for coming in.
Yeah, thanks.
Thanks, Connor.
You bet. So, you know, for those who don't know, what is the Park City Education Foundation? How do you relate to the school district and students here locally?
Great. Yeah. So our mission is to fund and support educator-powered initiatives that inspire all Park City students to reach their academic and lifelong potential. And we do that through partnering really closely with the school district to provide funding for a variety of initiatives and programs throughout all of our schools that touch every student.
Gotcha. So 501c3 nonprofit, kind of separate from the school district.
Yes.
Then. You've got a variety of initiatives around the Wasatch back. One related to Lucky Ones, which is interesting. They're having a lot of changes over there at their nonprofit. Can you talk about the coffee camper that you've been circulating?
Yeah, of course. So one of our initiatives is educator and student wellness. One way that we support our educators every year is by partnering with the Lucky Ones coffee camper to bring that to every one of our schools in the district in the fall, just to thank our educators for all of their work in the fall especially. It's a busy time of year. We want to especially thank the Lewis and the Doyleney families for their generous support to make that happen this year.
Yeah, you know, so what do you hear from students when they get to interact with the Lucky Ones coffee camper? You know, day to day, what does that look like for them?
You know, this is really a kind of one-time initiative that we do in the year, and it's really specifically for our educators. We support our students with other wellness initiatives that we'd love to talk more about this morning, but this one's really special for our educators, and I think they look forward to it every year. Jen's been part of that much longer than I have, so she can speak to the history of it, but I got to get around to a few of the schools this year, and the smiles when you get a warm cup of coffee and a little pastry in the morning from teachers, it's really, really special.
Yeah, it came out of COVID when, you know, we couldn't really gather inside and do things to thank our teachers in a normal way. So Lucky Ones had this trailer that they would use to bring their wares to each of the schools, or, you know, to anywhere. And so we thought, wouldn't that be a great way to support teachers? It would be outside, so that was a safe place, right? It's hard to remember back kind of all mm-hmm. the restrictions with COVID. And the feedback from it was really incredible. I mean, you think, oh, you're just getting a warm beverage and a treat, but just the fact that they were being shown this appreciation. We ask a lot of our educators fundraisers in the fall because they really help us with our fall fundraising, our Build a Foundation campaign. Plus, it's the start of the school year. And so that again, that first year, that fall of 2020, we've been doing it ever since. And it just has become a beloved part of the fall and is a great way to thank our educators. But it is just for the educators, not for the students. Gotcha. On that one.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, what's the scale of the program? Because I gather you work mostly with Park City Schools, but, you know, until recently, Lucky Ones used to have a location in Camas. Is it workable to, you know, expand the camper program at all?
Well, we are specifically started and founded to support the Park City School District. That's our mission. That's in our bylaws. We are part of it's a unique relationship in that we are part of the Park City School District, but we are also our own 501c3. So as wonderful as that is, you know, hopefully that would be something that maybe South Summit School District, you know, could do if they wanted to do, but our entire focus is in the Park City School District, and it has been for 40 years since we were founded.
Yeah, well, let's talk about some of those student-focused wellness initiatives, too. At Treasure Mountain, it'll be the second year this school year of the Utah Wellness Coordinator.
Yeah, so it's a kind of first-of-its-kind program in the state. The official title is Multi-Tiered Systems of Support Coordinator, and short for MTSS. MTSS is in all of our schools. This one specifically focuses on student wellness, and we're really piloting this to see about the impact it will have on students in terms of, you know, additional support that they need from a one-on-one touch with a counselor, you know, outside of just academic support, social and emotional wellness and support in that area.
Yeah, and at Treasure Mountain, that's also where they're doing a lot of the experiments with how to manage cell phones in the classroom. How are you involved with their cell phone pouch program?
Yeah, so this, you know, came from an idea. Again, we're educator powered. So one of the educators in our district, a few actually came and asked if this is something we would be interested in funding this year as a pilot program. And so we found the funding this summer, again, thanks to some incredible support from two specific donors I want to call out. The Alnoba Lewis Family Foundation and the Roberts Rothy Family Foundation provided the support for this program. And we're seeing really exciting results, or we're hearing really exciting results from Treasure Mountain. So just in terms of, you know, quantitative data, at this time last year, Treasure had, you know, 21 suspensions. This year, they're down to only 5, which is a huge decline in you know, disciplinary issues that they're seeing. And in terms of conflicts with students, they were telling us, you know, last year 1 to 2 per week. This year, a total of 5. So, you know, it's correlation, not causation, but we're excited to hear that there's been improvement in terms of challenges at Treasure, and hopefully in part due to the pairing of these programs for students.
The stats are really good to hear. Do you have any specific student stories, you know, that you've heard from parents?
Yeah, one of our board members has a daughter, a Treasure, won't call out who, but they shared a story with us. You know, in the beginning it was a little rough. Students are attached to their cell phones. She didn't love the idea of putting it away for the day. But after a couple of weeks, the students got used to the program. She was telling her parent that, you know, she was actually really enjoying it. Kids were interacting more during passing periods and at lunch, not kind of attached to their phones all day. And so just a more positive experience for her during the school day, which we love to hear anecdotes too, outside of data.
You know, what's the district's thinking on bringing the cell phone pouches to more schools right now? Are those stats already convincing people?
Yeah, I can't speak to district policy. I mean, there is a policy that went into effect this school year to have no cell phones out during the school day. That's a district-wide policy. Every school kind of handles that differently. This is how Treasure's handling that this year. And it's really up to each individual administrator at their school to make that decision. We'll see if the pouch pilot expands to other schools next year, especially as Treasure winds down its operations and, you know, people go to either Ecker or the high school.
Great. Well, is there anything else you wanted to talk about this morning?
So there's a giant day tomorrow. We just want to thank the community ahead of time for all their generosity to everybody in the community. Also, if you want to learn more about PCEF programs, PCEF initiatives, you can go to our website at pcef4kids.org and learn all about not only the wellness initiatives, but preschool, after school, arts, bright futures, classroom grants, all of it.
All right. We've been speaking with Ingrid Wheatley and Jennifer Billow from the Park City Education Foundation. Thank you, both of you.
Thank you.
And on the phone with us now from Park City Film, Executive Director Katie Wang. Good morning.
Good morning, Connor. Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So what's coming up soon at the Santee? You have one tonight.
Yes, we have one tonight. Lots of great films. It's kind of, this is like the lead into Christmas almost for film lovers, the holiday season, because all the great films were coming out for the Academy Awards. So it's like the best time of year if you love movies. So we're excited. We've had a great season so far. The past couple of weeks have just been especially good with special programming and speakers. I think last time I was on KPCW, it was like, you know, a smorgasbord of so many events. So we want to thank everyone for coming out to those. And tonight we invite you to come back for a special screening of Champions of the Golden Valley. The director spoke with Leslie earlier this week, and hopefully folks had a chance to hear that. I had a chance to see the film as a sneak peek screening in the spring, and it just was enthralled. Knew I had to bring it back here to Park City, so I'm thrilled. And so this is a story about remote mountain communities in Afghanistan who historically have not gotten along, and probably in current day are still, there's some rivalries there. But they all come together, both men and women, through their love of skiing and this annual ski race that they put together that crowns the champion of the valley, as the name suggests. The film has tones of kind of a classic underdog sports story, but then it takes a very serious twist when the Taliban takes over and unfortunately, you know, causes the collapse of Afghanistan, and then many of the film subjects are forced to flee the country. So it becomes this much bigger story than it originally, the directors will tell you, originally started out to be, but just is so beautifully done and just is a story about hope and resilience and community. And here we are on the eve of Live PC, Give PC, and we thought this would be a great way to celebrate all of those things and celebrate our community and have the things that we do here. So kind of a nice tie-in there thematically. So tickets are $10 for adults, free for students, and proceeds will benefit the Bamyan Ski Club in Afghanistan. And then we'll be joined after the film with director Ben Sturjaluski and producers Katie Sternholm and Bakhtash Ahadi. And we'll also have a reception with some Afghani desserts. And this is part of our Raising Voices film series. I want to thank Park City Municipal Corp and Park City Chamber for help bringing great films like this here to our community. So that'll be a fun show at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, and you mentioned, or they mentioned when they were on with Leslie earlier this week, that the Afghani desserts are from a restaurant down in Salt Lake. How'd you find that restaurant? It sounds exciting.
So Bakhtash is a refugee from Afghanistan. He actually lives in Pennsylvania and grew up there and has some interesting stories to share when I heard him at the premiere. And he has made contacts here in the community with the IRC and just within the local community here. So certainly the Afghani refugee community is invited to come to the film and just made contact with this restaurateur. And we're really excited to showcase his delicious food.
Great. All right. So, and then this weekend is Blink. And this is back to the usual schedule of Friday, Saturday, Sunday screenings.
Yes, exactly. And also one that thematically we thought would work well for our community. As most folks know, if you ever go to the Sundance Film Festival, not all independent films are appropriate for all ages or accessible to all ages. So we wanted to bring something to the to our screen that certainly this weekend would be, you know, all of our community members could go to and enjoy. So this is an unbelievable story of a French-Canadian family whose life, it's a true story, it's a documentary, whose life is turned upside down when three of their four young children are diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa, which is a rare eye disease that leads to severe visual impairment. But, you know, after kind of absorbing this information, they take this news and they decide to take a journey around the world for a year. They are determined to seize the day and fill the visual diaries of their children. And it is an amazing journey that they take. Their resilience and sense of adventure, their indomitable spirit is incredibly inspiring. And I think something we all can learn from and take away. We'll have a post-film discussion on Saturday night with Diane Bernhardt from the Hope Alliance and Ken Duke from the National Federation for the Blind and a couple other panelists to be determined. And we are partnering with the Hope Alliance as well on this film, the underwriters for the film this weekend. So a great conversation about the work that they do in our community and around the world about blindness and visual impairment. But again, definitely a film for all ages and is just remarkable. Definitely check out the trailer and come join us for that this weekend. And then we head to a Sundance film the following weekend. The Outrun. This premiered at Sundance 2024, and it stars Saoirse Ronan, who is one of my personal favorite actors. She's just unbelievable in everything she is in, and this film is no exception. She plays an alcoholic who's trying to break free from her addiction, and she takes a research job in the remote Orkney Islands in Scotland, which the Orkney Islands kind of take on a character. They become a character in the film as well, which is just so incredible. But her performance, the scenery, they're just so powerful and haunting. It is just an incredibly well-done film, and it's based on the memoir by Amy Liptrot. Then Thanksgiving weekend, we're back with We Live in Time with Florence Pugh and Andrew Garfield. And this is a deeply moving romance that's challenged by the limits of time. Beautiful performances by both actors, as you would expect. And then we round things out before I talk to you again the first weekend in December with Blitz. And this film is set in World War II London during the Blitz, when children were evacuated to the countryside for their safety. But 9-year-old George decides that he is going to jump off the train and make his way home through the war-torn countryside and city back to his mother and grandfather in, the center of London, kind of the center of the action. And director Steve McQueen just really puts us right into the heart of the battle in the city and brings to life a multicultural portrait of 1940s London that's rarely seen in movies about the war. So beautifully done. Saoirse Ronan is also in that film as well, so you get to see her twice on our screen, which is always a thrill for me. but kind of a nice mix of films, certainly from indie, and then more great films coming up, of course, to round out the rest of the year that we'll talk about next time. But yeah, parkcityfilm.org. For all that.
And I think We Live in Time is getting distributed right now. If it's not already out, it'll be coming out around that time that you're screening it. So that's kind of a current release, right?
Yes, well, they're all current releases. I mean, most of our films, we're not usually at the same time that they come out into the big commercial theaters, but we're pretty close thereafter. Definitely since COVID, that window has shortened. Blink is a film that has a very small distribution, so it's been great for us to get it. But yeah, we usually try to bring films in. Our town, we're in the home of Sundance Film Festival. People like new, they like current, they want to be on that cutting edge. But yeah, so these are all films that are just coming out now, and certainly will be some of them on the short lists, if not the final lists for the Academy Award nominations, which for some folks is kind of fun to kind of track when you're doing your ballots.
Definitely, and want to plug again, 7 p.m. tonight is that screening of Champions of the Golden Valley at the library, not your average Warren Miller ski film. Going to have that panel discussion afterward. And if you want to listen to that interview Leslie did with the directors and producer, that is on kpcw.org. We've been speaking with Park City Films' Katie Wang. Anything you want to mention before you go?
Two things. One, for the Bamyan Ski Club, if you make an extra donation to them, they have these amazing wooden skis that you'll see in the film that they hand make themselves with these plastic milk cartons for bindings, which is incredible. But you can get one of those if you make an extra donation to the ski club. So something to think about. And if you've ever wondered where your 70s ski clothes went, you will see them in the film. but parkcityfilm.org for all of our films. You can get tickets online or at the door. Showtime tonight, 7 o'clock. This is a suggested donation for the tickets. So no one will be turned away for lack of ability to pay. Children are free. So if there's a film that the ticket price is a barrier for you, please show up anyway. We'd love to have you. This is a great celebration about community, and that's what it's all about. So we want to have as many folks in there as want to see it. So thanks for supporting us and come on out to the movies.
All right. Park City Film Executive Director Katie Wang, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well, the Town Lift, which carries skiers from Park City's Main Street to Park City Mountain Slopes, is at risk of closing. This after a new lawsuit filed in 3rd District Court. And KPCW's Parker Malatesta reports Town Lift Plaza owners now plan to sell the property.
A lease agreement dating back to 1981 allows Park City Mountain to operate the Town Lift. Property owners Pat, Ed, and Mike Sweeney filed a lawsuit last week arguing Park City Mountain owner Vail Resorts violated the decades-old lease governing their land at the base of Town Lift and now want out. Pat Sweeney said the family has exhausted its patience and feels it can no longer trust Vail as a working partner. He told KPCW they remain concerned about potential legal risk after a personal injury lawsuit was filed against the family last year. Sweeney said they now intend to sell the Town Lift Plaza and will list the property in the coming days. He said the area's future is uncertain with the pending lawsuits and unknown desires of the future owners. In a statement, Park City Mountain Vice President and COO Deidre Walsh said the Town Lift will continue to operate now and in the future through long-standing and long-term rights in the property. Walsh said the resort values its relationship with the Sweeney family. She said Park City Mountain has complied with and respected its agreements related to the Townlift Plaza. According to court documents, the issues center around liability. Vail agreed to carry and maintain general liability insurance, insure the three brothers as part of the insurance policy, and defend them in the event of any legal claims against them related to the Townlift property. The Sweeney's lawsuit argues Vail failed to do all three. The dispute was born of a separate lawsuit brought by Dina Miller, who claims she slipped and fell in ski boots in a public restroom at the base of the town lift in 2023. She sued Vail and the Sweeneys for negligence in April. She is seeking an unspecified amount of compensation for medical expenses and ongoing injuries. Meanwhile, Vail and the Sweeneys point the liability finger at each other. Vail claimed the Sweeneys are tasked with restroom maintenance, not the resort. But the Sweeneys say Vail must defend them in accordance with the 1981 agreement. Vail has refused. In August, the brothers sent a notice of pending default to Vail, saying the company failed to follow the longtime agreement. Vail's lawyer claimed the company was not in default, which sparked the lawsuit filed November 8th. Along with attorney fees and compensation, the Sweeneys are seeking to terminate the lease and all easements that allow the town lift to operate. The town lift, just off the bottom of Park City's Main Street, is scheduled to begin daily operations in mid-December. Parker Malatesta, KPCW News.
Well, only a couple hundred votes now separate Republican Ari Ioannidis and Democrat Megan McKenna in the race for Summit County Council. The results released by the Summit County Clerk's Office last night show a 1% margin between the two for seat C. All council seats are at large, meaning they represent the entire county. What was once a 1,200-vote lead for McKenna shrunk to just 278 because of in-person voting on Election Day. Summit County Clerk Eve First says her office processed all those ballots yesterday. There were 740 early in-person voters and 1,300 on November 5th, so just over 2,000 in-person voters total. First is estimating 700 ballots are left to count. That's enough that a McKenna victory is not guaranteed. Ioannidis may have won the election if most of the remaining ballots go to him. She says another round of numbers will be ready by Friday. Part of the reason it's taken a week to report results is the high volume of write-ins this election. Wednesday's results also included an uptick in votes for Phil Lyman and Natalie Claussen for governor and lieutenant governor. They ran as write-ins after losing the Republican nomination to incumbent governor Spencer Cox and lieutenant governor Deidre Henderson. Locally, incumbent Democrat Roger Armstrong has a comfortable 4% margin to remain on the Summit County Council. He was challenged by Hoytsville entrepreneur and Republican Tori Welch. Two notable ballot initiatives also appear decided. A new 0.5% sales tax to fund emergency services will pass, and a Northern Summit County voters rejected a $114 million bond to fund a new high school. Once all votes are tallied, Summit County's turnout this election will be over 85%. Election results will not be official until the county council certifies them. They're expected to do so before the statewide certification, which happens November 25th. And starting tomorrow, street parking will not be allowed on any roads in Summit County unless otherwise marked. Winter parking restrictions will be in effect until April 15th to allow snowplows to safely clear the streets. Under county code, any vehicles or obstacles preventing snow removal will be towed or removed at the owner's expense. The county is also not responsible for any damage to cars illegally parked on the road. Summit County crews remove snow from 4 a.m. to 10 p.m. as needed. As for trash pickup, if snow prevents Republic Services from collecting garbage and recycling, bins should be brought back in by 7 p.m. that day so plows can clear the area. Then residents can put them out again the next day by 7 a.m. for collection. More information about Summit County and Park City winter restrictions and trash collection at kpcw.org. You've been listening to KPCW's Local News Hour. I'm Connor Thomas, filling in for Leslie this morning. You can catch KPCW Park City at 91.7 and 88.1 FM in Summit County, 91.9 in Wasatch County. Stream us live at kpcw.org or the KPCW app, or ask your smart speaker politely to play KPCW Radio.